This is an I Am Listening exclusive podcast.
The kids know it's happening. It's not the kids' fault. It's previous generations. So they get understandably quite, I think, embittered by it. And one of the big challenges is to be positive with them and say, yeah, look, there's big problems, but there are big solutions to big problems. And that's what I have to believe in. That's what I do believe in. We've always found solutions to our problems.
Welcome back to season two of the Tread Lightly podcast. If you thought season one was just about recycling, hugging trees, think again, because this time we're taking things up a notch, talking about everything from how community shapes our planet to why faith might just have something to say about the environment, and even digging into the quirks of human behaviour.
I think we all realised quite quickly that the environmental conversation is way too big to keep simple. So we're diving in headfirst at the deep end. Buckle in, because this season we're going to get real. Let's go.
Let's do this. Hello and welcome back to this episode where we are chatting to Bradley, who is a teacher and also a carbon conscious creator. I'm really sad to say that this is actually our last episode in this series too. We have enjoyed so much recording this series and chatting to some wonderful, amazing people. I think that's probably the best thing about doing this podcast with Liz is, one, we get to take our lunch break, sit back, have a cuppa together and meet some really interesting people that have got amazing stories that I don't think we would necessarily hear in the normal everyday hustle and bustle of normal life. So it feels really nice to be able to capture those moments and then put them out there for the world and for you guys to be able to hear. So I reckon you need to grab yourself a cuppa because it's a little bit chilly outside. Get a nice little cover on the sofa or wherever you are and enjoy this episode, and make sure you stay in touch with us on our socials to let us know kind of what conversations you want us to be having for the next season, because we cannot wait to be able to bring that to you coming very, very soon. We hope that you have such a wonderful Christmas and a even better new year. Take care. Hello, Bradley, the teacher. How are you?
I'm very well, thanks. Yeah, I'm the teacher.
I like that. It's bold.
It isn't what I said, but okay, I'm a teacher among other things, but I will
introduce yourself. Tell us about yourself.
I've been a teacher for 16 years now. It's primarily what I fill my time with.
Okay, so whereabouts do you teach?
I teach at a school in Rochester. Okay. I teach design technology to pupils who are 10 to 18.
I've started doing some
I prefer the older pupils when I like having an option subject. So when they choose it for GCSE or A-level, you know that there's a certain commitment that they've made as well.
It's the teacher's dream, isn't it? Having students that have chosen your subject that you can then teach to, right?
Yeah, it's a terrific privilege. I suppose it's one of those things, as I was saying earlier, it's another thing to be grateful for in life, that if you think about it too much, you can kind of spin out and become less effective because you go, oh, wow, I'm so blessed to have this opportunity. And I suppose students or pupils would look at that and go, well, just do the lesson, man.
chill. Yeah. But we knew each other a couple of years back when you were part of the refilling journey. And I know that you're really kind of into sustainability, learning more about sustainability and even within your kind of your work as well. So I wondered if you would be happy to tell us a little bit more about your journey into sustainability and what kind of sparked your interest in this particular area alongside your teaching.
So going back a bit then, yeah, I sought you out, Liz, when you were doing the refill, because I'd started on a master's in sustainable design and I was very interested in the attitudinal change towards moving away from obsolescence and how we can fix or how we can make positive, impactful, meaningful change.
You're a very practical person, aren't you?
I love fixing stuff.
Yeah, so I remember at the time, you're a very clever guy, like working through kind of the systems and things.
I genuinely do enjoy keeping things going, keeping things out of landfill. So that's where our paths crossed. So then I was on my master's in sustainability or sustainable design then at Brighton, but the world was just about to go mad. That was 2020 then. Up until then, I had been teaching design and my BSE was in product design. So back in 2002 till 6 at Brunel. And that's the first time anyone had talked to me, as we were saying just now, about environmentalism. That was, I suppose, when it was lit. I had a terrific lecturer called Paul Turnock, and he got me thinking about our attitudes towards waste. And that was 2002.
Did it feel quite revolutionary to be having these conversations back then?
Yes, because I suppose I'd been brought up as a young little capitalist or a consumer, and yet it had not dawned on me that for millions of years we've been living as part of cycles where death becomes next life, or so, you know, I don't know, a larvae will eat whatever, and the bird will eat the larvae, and then the fox will eat the bird, the apex predator then dies, goes back into the ground, and this is just, that's just nature, that's just cycles, unflawed for millions of years. And yet in the last 100 or so, I suppose humans have tried to break that with this kind of linear idea of, you know, buy, chuck, move on to the next bit. But of course, we've started to see, oh, well, that's not sustainable. So that's when I started to go, there has to be another solution.
And what's really interesting is that it was your lecturer that inspired that in you, and then you went on to go and to teach him. But what inspired you after you did your degree, became a teacher? Why later on did you then choose to go back and do a master's in sustainability?
I think it's Henry Adams said, teachers impact eternity because they cannot know where their influence ends. So you get a very powerful word, privilege, comes up again, where you can have that one moment where a pupil will go, happened for me, a Damascus moment, you go, that's more about the truth, I suppose, that we seek about how the world really works.
And why
I hinted at it earlier that I was a little bit bored of teaching, I suppose, or I wondered if this was a plateau, or this was going to be me for the next 40 years. There was that, but also I think education is probably the best thing that if we think of like Maslow's hierarchy of, you know, survival, we need shelter, and then as we ascend further up that triangle, right at the top, I think one of the best things you can do for yourself is to just keep educating yourself and keep using these days where we're not under any imminent threat to learn more. So I wanted to I'd love to do a doctorate as well.
In sustainability.
Oh, I mean, whatever I could get help I'd be able to afford to do it.
Got a proper thirst for knowledge of learning more about it now, do you feel?
Yeah, if I didn't have to earn money, I would go to, I don't know, Prague and do architecture, or Edinburgh and English literature, or I don't know. I would just be in education for the rest of my life if money wasn't an issue.
So where did your sustainability master's take you? What happened next?
Not enough. Well, I started a little kind of business on the side to try and practice what I'd been preaching a bit. And you'd notice I'm quite practical, so I enjoy building garden rooms and landscaping, decking. I enjoy being outside as well, so it's enabled me to earn just some kind of summer money. It's got me knocking at the door of ecology work with a friend who has recently just left a large ecology group in Canterbury, and it got me taken seriously enough to be involved and seen as a genuine contributor towards that, which I really enjoyed. That might be a thread that goes further. The lecturing might just be not enough of a change for me. It might just become...
Feel more just like teaching.
Exactly, yeah. So I don't really know, other than I do really love the idea of being able to learn more.
You've got so many different hats. I love listening and learning from people like you, because we've got such a privilege, haven't we, kind of doing this podcast and meeting other people in different places and being able to chat to people and learn from people like you that literally have got your fingers in lots of pies. How do you juggle all of that stuff?
Well, thank you, but I'm only really doing what I enjoy. So I if I don't enjoy it, then
don't say that like a bad thing. That's a good thing.
Well, I'm fortunate that I'm able to.
Yeah.
But it mostly comes from a short attention span.
Yeah.
I think. I mean, I suppose I've committed to a career for, like I say, 16 years I've been teaching for.
Yeah.
But the other things I'm picking up, I wouldn't do them if I didn't enjoy them, I suppose.
I think gone are the days where you have to stay in one career until you retire. I think life doesn't work like that anymore.
They're dead, aren't they?
Instead of thinking that that is a shortcoming, I think there's something really impressive and good about that. You take what you've learned, you become better at the next thing you do.
Yeah, and I think that's great for your students, actually, to be able to see that kind of mindset that it's not just, this is what you have to do, and now you have to do it for 50 years.
Grind it out.
Gone are those days.
Because the world changes as well, and you've recognised that and responded to that, which I think is what we're going to need, right, going into the future?
Well, for sure. I do say to the pupils, and I hope that they don't they make all of these plans, of course they're going to. And in a way, you kind of don't want them to come true because you want life to be, life will probably be exciting. We're probably switched on as many to how we can't predict what the world's going to be like in 5 years, you know, let alone what their 50-year career is going to be. So you have to be able to be reactive. You have to be able to deal with change. We know that we're going to be grappling with a world of change in the near future. Right. But I mean, to flip it back, I was impressed with the refill. You're pouring yourself into this. This is a great setup. Like looking, and the idea of setting up this this podcast, and then when I was listening to it, it is Liz, I know, yeah, I know.
That's really nice. It's and it's with the amount of people that we've connected with through this space, through the environmental space, is insane, and the different angles that people take, it's brilliant. It's so good, the different hats that people wear and the different angles and the way that people connect, because it's such a thing that pulls everyone together, because it's just so important, and it just connects people in a way that I've never recognized it in any other walk of life. It doesn't matter if you're an accountant, hairdresser, whatever else, this is like a real connecting point for a lot of people.
So is it true that you've got a role at Greenwich University's Chatham Dockside?
Yeah, so I'm what would be called an HPL, an hourly paid lecturer, but I ran through a few projects with their Faculty of Engineering where the pupils wanted a client. My school has some land which I think they should, I think they're missing an absolute trick. They should turn it into a regeneration site, whether they wanted to kind of commercialize that or maybe turn it into more of a mini Shawn Country Park, or whether they wanted to just get biodiversity net gain credits, you know, to monetize it. All of these things are optional. And the school, and the reason this was interesting to Greenwich was because it's a floodplain. They can't build on it.
What, Greenwich University is on a floodplain?
No. Sorry, the school land.
Oh, the school that you teach in's land is on a floodplain.
Yeah, so they've got a bit of land that they wanted to put a sports centre on, I think, originally, and they think they've been kind of sold a pup. It's never going to be developable. So I took it to the university students as a pseudo brief for them to propose what they would do with it. It was really exciting what they came back with as well. I enjoyed that. I don't know if I'll be asked to do that again. That was last year. I was kind of hoping more would come from it, actually, but I'm not going to be there this year. I'd really love to go back to Canterbury, actually, Christchurch. That's where I did my PGCE. And I know that they've got a faculty that's really geared towards this. Loads of people are wanting to either seem to be more green or environmentally minded or are actually putting up the release for it.
Do you come across that then? Do you kind of come across that kind of greenwashing stuff in industry, and how do you deal with that when you see it?
Massively.
Is it easier for you to spot than somebody like Liz and I?
So again, I made friends with a guy called Mark Stevenson, and he does a podcast with John Richardson and Edgar Lesby. He's a very high level consultancy on this.
Get him on our pod.
Yeah, get him.
100%. And John Richardson while you're there as well.
Yeah, I don't
Unless
know.
Unless his stuff will go over my head, though. I feel like, are these like real brainiacs?
Yeah, he's quite inspiring. You know, once he gets going, he's a force. He came to speak at my school. He was a bit effy jeffy. We weren't expecting that, but he put on a terrific
Well, then talk. I will be best mates with him.
Kayleigh's like, get him on.
Get him on, yeah.
Well, I mean, you might be better off not kind of name dropping me and just listening to that podcast, and they're very open.
Yeah,
emailing and saying, we're doing this, would you like to come on? You could say maybe I'd be there, but I wouldn't help. He's a
standalone guy.
Yeah. For example, okay, so this is one of the things he said, which hopefully answers your question about greenwashing.
He
said, being sustainable is a lot like sex when you're a teenager. Loads of people say they're doing it, but they're either lying or they're not very good at it. And I think I see that a lot in industry. And it's probably because there's not a currency. There's not a measurable way that we can prove this. I had a sandwich the other day, and it said, oh, this is the carbon footprint of this egg sandwich is 0.5 kilograms of carbon. And I just thought, what? How would you know that? It would be great to have those traffic lights, like, you know, this egg sandwich has got lots of salt and it's a red, and you go like, okay, that's good to know.
Yeah.
But it'd be good if it, you know, if they say, oh, well, avocados, they've come all the way from, I don't know, Colombia or so, they've got quite a big carbon footprint, whereas this egg's just come from Bessie's farm up the road. If they actually knew, I would love to drill down into that and find out.
I would as well. Because you can't, there's no government standard where you map that against, is there?
Exactly this.
Make it up. And where that chain stops, no one really knows. Similar conversation we had, I can't remember who it was with, around the, I think it might have been Apple. and around kind of ethically sourcing the parts to the point at which they buy off a buyer underneath. They don't know what that looks like. So they can track the ethics and the people and the products that are involved.
To a certain point.
To a point. And then there is, I don't even know, I would say a buyer, but there's like a level under which.
Corruptness.
But there's just no access to that. To that. Sorry, I keep interrupting you, but I find that stuff so interesting. And I'm going to ask you a question when you've finished about something that's relevant to that as well.
You see that's very rife in the fashion industry as well, where material supply comes from. But I would like to just, wouldn't it be great? Do you think that could ever happen? Where products have a labeling that say, well, this is kind of carbon literacy or this carbon currency where people can, because carbon unites us globally, not yen or dollars or it's carbon and drinking water, isn't it really? It would be great if that was, I know that's really idealistic, but you get someone like Mark Stevenson on and blow your minds with it, do it, reach out.
That'd be really interesting. I would really like to do it. Can I ask you with your kind of design and your construction hat on. So I had a conversation with somebody the other day who was talking about the development of farmland near Whitstable, saying at the minute it's sprayed with pesticides, it's got next to no biodiversity in there, no ponds, maybe a hedge around the outside, and that's about it. So that there was going to be a net gain from developing that site and having gardens in that site. And we had a conversation, and it was a good conversation, and she was a friend, so it wasn't with any
malice or anything.
No malice, yeah. No. But the conversation I then had was saying, but that farmland needs to go somewhere else to still generate the food. So is that really going to be a net gain with the carbon credits and the things that you have to do within the construction world? And or does the fact that you'd have to then potentially import some food because you've taken farmland away? And this is where I go, I don't think I can make it make sense. Or have they thought that through and the carbon credits take into account that offsetting of land? I don't even think I've made sense in my own head.
No,
of that
I know
question.
Exactly what you're
can
saying.
Can you repeat it back to me in this way that makes sense?
What you're doing is you're not being myopic. Like you're looking into the future. You're gazing into that, you're thinking 100 years, which is great, which is what more people need to be doing. Because when they found crude oil, they thought, yes, this is an amazing, this fixes all of our problems. We can just put this in a barrel and move it wherever. Everyone's got energy, forever, forever happy. And the whales would be fine because we're not going to be killing all of them for their oil to light our streets. Everyone wins. Brilliant. Rockefeller loved it. And here we are, you know, 150 years later, it was a short-sighted solution. So when you're looking at that farmland and going, that it probably does mean that we just import it.
Import the food, do you
mean? Yeah, probably. But it depends how we want. Do we, you know, sort our own back gardens out first? Or because have you heard today that Ratcliffe coal, this last coal
power
station.
They've shut it down, haven't they?
In the UK. So the UK is going to be the first major economy to not have any coal. But there's still the need for the energy. I think it's 2,800 jobs lost.
Right.
Until that power station is fired up again as an electric power station.
Okay.
So what, I took some kids to Leipzig to the electric BMW factory. It was a great trip, and it's, I'm trying to think of the designer of it. It's all liquid poured concrete. It's a stunning setup for, you know, what is obviously an industry with an eye on the future.
Is this in Germany?
Mm, just outside of Berlin. And the guy gave us the tour, and he said, I'm tempted to do like a German accent. He said, and here's where we get all of the electric batteries back, and this wind, this turbine recharges them, and then every second Sunday those batteries power the whole factory. And you go, that's great, isn't that great?
Is this secondhand batteries?
Yeah, the batteries out of the cars. So then one of my students says, so what happens when the batteries don't take a charge from the wind turbine anymore? And the guy kind of but when we take them out of the cars and we plug them in, and the wind turbine charges them up, and then every time, yeah, you know, you've said that, and they get used again, and that's great. Mm-hmm. It's the idea of recycling, but it's not about just recycling it once. It's about impetuity. And I could have high-fived the kid. I was like, yeah, that's exactly the kind of question. But what happens next? Eventually, you've got a load of, I don't know, cadmium, lithium, whatever these, we know these, you know, toxic and heavy metals that are in batteries, eventually they do reach a natural end. What are they going to be like?
And there's
blocks?
There's an issue then, right, that we don't know what to do with the redundant batteries of electric cars. Is that true?
That's coming, yeah. That will come, because electric cars aren't really, they're not part of a cyclical future. But it is an improvement, you see.
And just that's like, what blows my brains. Does it blow your brains? I'm like, is it better? Is it not better?
I'm just still stuck on the kid that's going, but why? But why? But why? We all just need to do that. but why? Yeah. But why? And I think I don't know the answer. I don't know the answer.
Even like to know that we're blessed to be able to ask you the questions today, and with your extended level of knowledge, you can give us a kind of good conversation back. But there are people that can't even ask these questions. So I'll give you another example. I was talking to my uncle, who's worked in the car industry since the kind of the 60s, and so he's dead against electric, you know, kind of worked in the Jaguar factories in the Midlands, and really kind of isn't on board with this, and sees all the kind of problems with it, with the battery life, with the heat that it burns at, so if there's a crash. So to have a conversation with him when I was looking at an electric car, I'd go, oh, it's a no then, isn't it?
Well, they are very good points.
They are very good points.
Very valid. Huge footprints to make these cars.
Yeah, exactly that. And then you have somebody else that comes in that goes, but it is better. And then you go, oh, is it better though for that?
Yeah, kind of regret that, because it isn't binary like that. So I don't know. I don't know enough to say whether electric cars.
I've pulled you into the wrong area necessarily. I know you're in construction, but I mean more the conversations being so complex.
But there aren't these you know, golden geese answers. No,
yeah, it's, yeah.
But what is better is the conversation, is the critical thought to go. You know, is it? But okay, so this field's being repurposed for this. Where is that supply? So I mean, I can tell you about some. Just like an A-level theory standard answer about things like circular economies. Mm-hmm. And if you're familiar, so a contractual economy, like, so my school could say, okay, we're a Samsung school now. And all of the tech, so this is a way to try and tackle obsolescence and waste. So it's a good thing. This is being taught at a curricular level. So the concept is that your establishment, your wherever you work becomes a Samsung school. And then all of the projectors and all of the laptops and all of the...
Oh, so that's a good thing.
Well, because if they break, then they go back to Samsung. They don't end up in landfill. Samsung will want to reuse those parts. They'll fix them. And then gradually when you get to 5G, 6G, whatever's going to replace that tech, then that tech will go to the developing world, and then they'll have an opportunity to use it. So eventually that ends, because there'll be a part of society that ends up with the rubbish broken tech. But it is a kind of a delay to that concept of getting rid of waste. The only real immediate problem with a circular economy is things like protectionism, and you'll get monopolies forming as well, because I think Samsung are probably powerful enough, and if there's any other tech company that maybe wants to furnish a school with it can't.
I see what you mean.
But I think we've crossed that bridge a while ago anyway.
Huge, isn't it?
Blows my brains. We sit there talking about your role within schools and what you did at your degree, and that just every question opens up 20 more questions, doesn't it?
Sorry, yeah, I haven't got any answers.
No, that's fine.
It's just, but I think we're all there. It's just trying to get other people to be understanding that there isn't, you know, because I went into this fired up in 2002 or so, really angry. I went down the activist route. Mm. And the problem is now 20, 25 years on, the kids especially are fed up with that, because they've all had Greta and they've all had Attenborough and they've all felt immensely guilty. And if they don't feel guilty, then we're not going to reach them anyway. You don't want guilt, but it's also part of this kind of, this is probably the word of the day, is this privilege, like this kind of first world, we go, oh no, because of my actions, or because I'm involved in this cause of climate change, etc.
Yeah.
We know it's happening. The kids know it's happening. It's not the kids' fault. It's previous generations. So they get understandably quite, I think, embittered by it. And one of the big challenges is to be positive with them and say, yeah, look, there's big problems, but there are big solutions to big problems. And that's what I have to believe in. That's what I do believe in. We've always found solutions to our problems.
Are you tired of the same old chat about saving the planet? You know, like the reduce, reuse, blah, blah, blah. Well, it's time to shake things up, because season 2 of the Tread Lightly podcast is here, and we're diving deeper than your recycling bin.
This season, we're talking about community, faith, and yes, even why humans behave so weirdly sometimes when it comes to conversations about the environment.
Oh my gosh, they do. But there's no boring lectures here, so just real talk. Tough questions and a little bit of banter along the way, because let's face it, we all need to lighten up when we're trying to save the planet, right?
So if you're ready to stop tiptoeing around some of the big environmental stuff, get real and join the conversations. Come tread lightly with us.
Catch season 2 of the Tread Lightly podcast, available wherever you get your podcasts, like now.
And that could be things like desalination. Yeah, the water levels are going to rise. So desalination tech will improve. big opportunity there. If you're capital, you know, if you want to make money out of this world,
100%,
there's huge opportunities to be a solutions finder, to be, you know, one of the heroes.
That is the thing that blows my mind, right? Have you heard, you know, this dude Elon?
Get him on.
He has got a mission, I think, to send, to do something for his son. It's gone out of my brain. Have you read this?
Is this about getting people into space?
Space, I think it is, yeah.
Why not?
And I'm like, I can't get my head around, your son's obsessed with space, so I'm going to spend an obscene amount of money and research and all that stuff to make your kid's dream come true. But actually what's facing your kid's future is so scary and actually will have a bigger impact on them.
Elon Musk could.
But in terms of like when you're looking at solutions and stuff.
Why is he not funding the water desalination?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to tell Elon how to spend his money, but do you know what I'm saying?
Like, I'd like to be able
to be able to
as well. Hero to millions, but...
But there are many people like that, right? That have got enough power and influence and money to kind of be able to make those big waves of change in the right direction.
They don't realise that makes them a hero, I guess, do they?
And then you've got people that are like, using an example like Chris Packham, for example, right, who's only very recently just kind of used his name, if you like, and his status to join this sort of argument, isn't it, and to get people to take action.
Yeah.
And you kind of think,
be the hero.
They're like, where's the people in the middle of that? Like, I'm not putting Chris down the bottom of the pecking order, but do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, Elon Musk saves the world. Do you know what I mean, though?
I completely went off at a tangent.
No, but it's the same. Yeah, like, so it's of course relevant. And again, maybe when Elon started out and had his vision and developed his dreams and goals, these weren't problems. These aren't things that maybe he doesn't get it or see it the same way. He almost certainly doesn't. But I think it's people like that and are driven or perhaps possess an ego. Like, it's really wild to speculate about it, but
yeah.
That's why he is as successful as he is. Whereas hopefully in the 20 years, it's been a kind of an educational and a revolution of people's thinking about this in the last 20 years in countries like ours, where we're afforded the time without perhaps being under threat of disaster or war, I don't know, where we can focus on these issues. People, perhaps billionaires, let's say in China, there's I think there's more billionaires in China now than in the States. I'm not gonna be able to.
I do this all the time.
Correctly.
Don't worry, it's absolutely fine. You get it in your head, and you're like, no.
But that was up until the Kyoto, and even I think in COP still considered to be a developing nation, whereas there are many billionaires who've very rapidly risen to tech wealth. And are their values aligned with being sustainable with that, or just about winning? It's monopoly. But hopefully the new generation will be more aligned and say, well, you know, I need to offset this wealth, or I can use this wealth for good. I don't know. I don't think any good will perhaps come from saying, you know, let's get Jeff and Elon together and have an arm wrestle, and whoever loses has to give a billion quid to another cause. Or what cause would you pick? Who decides? And then they'd be accused of bias, or at least he can't be accused of bias if he's helping the son get to space. Just nepotism.
Nepotism, not bias. Bloody hell. So obviously we've gone big. We've talked about Elon Musk and, you know, out there across the world in China and that side of things, in sustainable construction. So if somebody who's listening was thinking, right, I'd love a garden room, I would love to do an extension, but I want to think about it through a sustainable lens. Obviously,
this is such a selfish question, I'm just going to say.
Is it?
No, but go for it. Do it. I can see her. This is the joy.
Well, how big do you want it to be, Liz?
this is the joy of being able to meet people like you. We're like, so we're just wondering.
Just wondering for all the listeners out there.
All the people listening probably want to ask this question, and it actually just...
Do you want it to be clad in cedar or...
Just get it done.
Good question. No, that is a fair point though, because...
But I like the fact that you have pulled me up to be like, you know me so well, Kayleigh, that you're like, I can see through your crap, Liz. Come on.
She'll have you building a new chicken coop before you even knew.
I'd love it. It's great.
Oh my God.
Brilliant.
Yeah, please do build me a new chicken coop. We've actually been talking about that, so that isn't even off the cards. But
excellent.
Truly, what do so talk about yourself, of course, but if you're talking to a builder, do you expect them to have your skills and experience? What kind of questions could people ask if it's as a DIY project? What kind of things could they think about? Like, if you're going into this saying, you know, I do want to do this, what kind of questions do they need to be asking themselves?
Going back to me personally, I'll go back to nepotism again, and I try to surround myself with people that have the same values as me. When you say people ask me to do it themselves, or what I would do if I was going to make something for them, and why?
Yeah, what lens do you look through when you go, right, I'm going to build something, but I want it to be really sustainable? What kind of questions do you ask?
Source locally, going back to the egg sandwich, or you know, making sure it's from as near as possible, making sure basic things like FSC, most things are, but what does that actually mean? That's forest stewardship.
And I want to know about this then. So you go and buy some wood from B&Q, Wix's, wherever, and it's stamped with FSC. And that's what I'm asking the question. Yeah, so do you go not them because they wouldn't be? And if so, is it a timber yard? And I really care, and I don't know. Do you know?
No, I have no idea. I mean, I go to Skips.
So. Yeah, well, first and foremost, that's what I'd love to do. That's what gives me a real kind of...
Does it give you a buzz?
Yeah, for sure.
I love that.
Yeah, I don't know if it's that serotonin or something, but fixing something, it makes me, you know, it makes me happy. Getting my hands dirty, you know, is, I think for some people, they get that as the equivalent of a hug.
Mm.
And I get that as well. I would definitely go and try and source material to try and save the... client money. Yeah, that, I mean, it works both ways, you know, it works for planet and pocket sometimes, but then being, you know, wanting qualities, you know, and sustainably, unfortunately that kind of comes with a cost, and that's things like, I don't know, if you want, like, if it were a garden room and you're going to have it insulated, obviously, I mean, you could get lamb's wool, you could get sheep's wool from Wales, probably. You'd find out who was selling it.
And is that cheaper, more expensive?
No,
it's more expensive.
This is one of these kind of conundrums. So a lot of people go for stuff like Celotex, that the foam that.
And is it plastic?
It's nasty stuff. It's like an aerated foamant. It's full of fillers and.
Oh, is it the spray?
No. Oh, yeah, you can do it with that. No, it's like a block board. Comes in the same sort of sizes as your plywoods, etc. And you get it in inch, you know, 250 mil, 100 mil, really thick, and it's meant to go in the cavities of walls.
Oh, but here's the question back to you, though, right?
It's good, isn't it? This
good,
is the problem.
Good, because it keeps you insulated.
It saves energy.
Oh, blows
insulated.
My brain.
Ah, but in 50 years' time, where they say, like, oh, yeah, you can't use it because it's carcinogenic, or they say, oh, yeah, no, that's not spec anymore.
Stop it. I've had my roof sprayed, and I'm like, I live thinking about that, going, was that the right decision or not? But, my house was cold, and I was putting my heating on all the time.
That's right.
Is it the right thing to do or not?
Do you remember, who did we watch? I don't know if you watch these guys, but they're called Camp...
Project Camp.
Have you come across these?
No.
So they are a group. I'm not even going to guess. Where are they? Where do they live?
They're Portugal, yeah.
In Portugal. And they basically have really like similar brains to you, in that you're like, right, here's a problem. I'm going to go and see what is the best way to fix this in the most sustainable way. And they just trial and test loads of stuff. So they
research
build,
modules, don't they?
Yeah, and they build stuff. And one of the things that they used for insulation was, do you remember when they had to chop down all of those invasive trees and they kind of made it into a cork? Did you see
that? No, it
was
a cork tree. So they went and stripped these cork trees.
Oh, was that what it was? There you go.
So we're
and
both
then,
obsessed.
And then they made that into their insulation panels from trees that they had to cut down because it was invasive.
No, I think with cork trees, it regenerates, doesn't it? I'm sure they could take a layer off.
Oh, see, look, I'm taking five different episodes.
No, but there's so many different episodes.
One.
Oh, I agree with you.
Yeah.
Project Camp.
Project Camp.
You'll love
it. It's a visual thing, is it?
Is it YouTube?
Okay, yeah, sounds great.
And it's probably right up your street where they just go, here's a problem, let's just work out what. And you'll see over time, like if you look on different seasons, in the first season they'll try this, then the second season they'll try this, and the third, because each time they learn something from it.
But they were taking like car engine oil and using it to paint the outside of this wooden frame that they built with a view to protecting it.
Yeah, would do. They've been doing that for hundreds of years. Wood sleepers.
Okay, catch up.
Sorry.
Catch up.
No, but trains, so railway sleepers.
Coated in used oil.
So, and ones that you'd use in your garden, when you cut them, they smell amazing, but they're obviously hydrocarbons and you shouldn't be smelling.
Toxic as hell.
Yeah, but that's how they make wood last a long while.
Oh, is it? See, I wouldn't have even known that. I just see it as a waste product, and they change the oil on their car and then paint the wood with it. And I'm like, it just wouldn't even cross my mind. But yeah, trying to just use stuff. They made a roof out of tin cans, didn't they?
Oh, that was really good. Was it tin? Yeah, it was. It was like
beer cans.
Aluminium, yeah.
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 And turned them into these like this roof and stuff. But how did we get on to talking about this? Oh yeah, they've just got the brains to think it through, access to stuff. They drive around, go to reclamation yards. They've got a basketball court, haven't they, for their flooring in there?
Oh yes, they did. They went to an old school gym and they were getting a new floor. So they had the old one.
And I love it.
Yeah.
This happened recently here in Gillingham as well, the badminton centre, and the scouts that run it replaced their yeah. floor. It's about, a lot of this is, you know, and the plywood, oh, just loads of it would have been great. But I just was a week too late. But it's about being in the right place for getting that condo, or being able to store it.
Oh, I was going
to
say, if you could just buy yourself a big...
Van, which deserves a better life, but there's nowhere to like leave. Sometimes you get job lot. We think this
you could do with a hanger
thousands,
somewhere, couldn't
exactly,
you?
Yeah. Thousands yeah. and thousands. I have friends who are so yeah. I'm massively echo chamber, and I've got people I talk to. Same things that they've moved. Well, they had to move out of Kent to have the storage space to run these projects. But they do the same kind of thing. Back in Brighton, there's Project Waste House.
I've seen it, yeah. And I met the
Duncan
designer,
Duncan Baker Brown. He's one of my lecturers at the uni.
No way.
Yeah, he's
cool. From him at when I worked at National Trust. What a guy.
Yeah.
I've never actually seen the house. Have you seen it?
No.
So all sorts of things like oyster shells, the shellac, the building material on the outside. Mad things as well. Like sometimes you wonder for years, I think talking about the problems that they faced with binding that as a substrate to make walls with. We always used to use lime for all of our mortar, which was abundant but not great because it was really cold. But then, and the air would go blow straight through it. But then you never get mold. But then, the more you insulate, the more you have to kind of ventilate. Otherwise,
I watch these programs of like eco homes where they build them and they cover big straw bales in lime either side, which looks amazing when they first get it done. It's all uneven and stuff, but then they start to have stuff like grow out of their walls where like the hay bales weren't completely dry.
Oh, right.
Things like this. So I'm like, I've seen them build it out of tyres, which is amazing, but it takes like 4 years to build because they have to like stand on it to the tyres. So I get all these things where you kind of go, I'd love to do it, but you have to have access, you have to have the knowledge, you have to have the time. You have to have
patience.
Yeah, the patience. And even like then troubleshooting down the line where you go, I've built this amazing house out of straw bales and lime mortar. I'm guessing it was lime mortar or cob, I think they called it. I don't know if it's the same thing. And then you're like, oh, bloody hell.
And this is where living in community is like, that's where the gold is. Because we talk about this so much that we've got such a beautiful special community here in Rainham. I don't know whereabouts you live, but there are just so many knowledgeable people that are willing to go, oh, I'll give you a hand with that. I know about this. And the amount of things that we've been able to share and kind of, barter's not the right word, but do you know what I mean? Like, I'll have your sexy green pesto.
100%,
do you know what I mean? And being able to just do that, but on a bigger scale, that I think, you know, you can do that and live urban. I don't believe that you just have to run away to a hippie field. And
that is our end goal, though, to run away to a hippie field, though.
Yeah, but
don't tell me that.
It is, but you don't like, you don't have to have that.
No,
you can have that in an urban setting. I think that is where the gold is. I've really enjoyed this conversation. I've learned.
I can tell you where to find a few hippie fields.
Oh, tell
and
us.
If you want to get, so I'll put you in touch with Heather, who's left to go and she's gone down to Polperro and started up.
Is that in Cornwall?
Yeah, stunning. So she has converted a farm.
Oh, stop this, it. Me and Kelly are going to live on her land.
Yeah, hi, Heather, she'd be so, how are you? Do you want to be her friend?
She'd be so, that's how she rolls. Yeah, let's go.
It's not out of the question.
You could do an episode on the road.
Stop it. And then we don't come back.
But then we'd have to offset our 8-9 hours driving down in a diesel van. How do you get there?
Just by never coming back.
Or we can just hop on the train and just stay there maybe for about 6 months and then...
Planting trees till we feel like we've cleared our conscience enough.
Sorry, Bradley,
or we
go
create
on.
Our own here in Rainham. Because to answer your question, I'm from Rochester.
Yeah.
And there's so much red tape. Or you can't change those windows because it's a listed building, for example.
Yeah.
But Rainham, you're just on the doorstep or like, look out your window and it's actual countryside out there. Maybe, I don't know, someone will hear this and say, yeah, I've got an acre I don't need, you get sponsorship from it, or you develop something there that becomes...
There's a lady on Lower Rainham Road who used to be one of the customers at the Circle, and I really want to talk to her. She's next to the pear orchards, the condemned pear orchards, but she's probably got about an acre down there. She's doing some really cool stuff.
Well, if you see, it's because of people like you making these conversations making these links and forcibly making these networks, this is happening. So
the networks are a good thing. So we're pleased that you're kind of in the gang, Bradley. Let's keep in touch. Yeah, spread the word.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for coming.
That's it for today's episode of the Tread Lightly podcast. We hope you enjoyed the conversation and maybe, like Kaylee and myself, even picked up a new perspective along the way.
If you did, do not keep it to yourself. You need to give us a like, rate the podcast and share it with somebody who needs to hear it. And of course, follow us on all of our social media, which is hilarious because we are on LinkedIn, TikTok, oh my gosh, Facebook and Instagram. And you can also stay in the loop for more episodes and updates. Thank you so much for listening, and as always, keep treading lightly.
This has been an I Am Listening exclusive podcast. For more information, head over to our website, iam-listening.co.uk.